Thou art fairer than the children of men. Grace is poured into thy lips. Therefore God hath blessed thee forever. Gird thy sword upon thy thigh, O most mighty, with thy glory and thy majesty. And in thy majesty ride prosperously, because of truth and meekness and righteousness. Thy right hand shall teach thee terrible things. Thine arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, whereby the people fall under thee. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of thy kingdom is a right scepter. Thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness. Therefore God, thy God, hath anointed thee with oil of gladness above thy fellows. Verse 8, all thy garments smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia. Out of the ivory palaces whereby they obey thee glad. King's daughters were among thy honorable women. Upon thy right hand did stand the queen and the gold of Ophir. Verse 13, the king's daughters all glorious within. Her clothing is of wrought gold. Verse 17, I will make thy name to be remembered in all generations. Therefore shall the people praise thee for ever and ever. This delightful psalm has been divided different ways and different applications that can be given to the king and his beauty, and linking it, of course, with the bride, and obviously it's Israel, of course, that's in mind as he speaks of the daughter and so on. I really don't, as you would know, have time to touch all of that this morning. There are four things we're told in the psalm that are really dealt with. First of all, there is the righteousness of the king. His kingdom, brethren and sisters, as we are well aware of, is going to be a kingdom of righteousness. This world knows very little of righteousness today. And if his kingdom is going to be a kingdom of righteousness, then the king has to be the righteous one. There's only one who could ever fit that standard, who could ever be of that qualification. That's the one that we've remembered this morning. That's the one that we're associated with, the king in his rejection. Speaks, of course, not only of the righteousness of the king, but the rule of this king. Men today are throwing up their hands in despair because they can't rule. Democracy likely is one of the best forms of government. We certainly wouldn't want to be under any other kind of a government, but it has failed as well. But of that rule and of that reign, there'll be no failure. At the latter part of the song, he speaks of the remembrance of this king. But what really is upon my mind, just for the 10 minutes that I have, I want to speak about the raiment of the king. And I am looking at, first of all, that verse that we read and often is quoted, verse 8, all thy garments smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia out of the ivory palaces whereby they have made thee glad. Now, we would think of some of his garments smelling that way, practically speaking, but we may not think of all of them being that way. I think there's at least, you could correct me and maybe even help me on it, but as I considered, I think there was likely 5 different types of garments or clothing that the Lord wore between the night of his betrayal and his crucifixion, right to the end. First of all, of course, there was his own garment, which he was bound before Annas and Caiaphas, that would be his own garment. And in that garment, of course, was the garment that he would have gone into the garden and sweat, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Any of us know anything about clothing, know what sweat does to clothing. But let me remind you, that never changed the fragrance of his garment. Not so much today, simply because smoking has been banned for such places, but you know as well as I do, on the way home from a meeting, your husband or you may have stepped into a variety store to pick up a quart of milk or a liter of milk or whatever, and you were not in there too long, and you come back out, and whoever was in the car with you say, wow, what are they doing in there besides smoking? Because very quickly you pick that up. It is interesting that when it comes to deceiving, when it comes to deceiving the old man, Isaac, that Rebekah, in her subtlety, takes the garment that Esau was wearing, which I think would likely have been the coat of sleeves, or the same as that we have in Luke chapter 15, the garment given to the prodigal when he's brought back, But notice that Isaac picks up the smell of the field from that garment. May I ask you, what was Esau doing wearing a garment like that into a field? He didn't put any value on it. That was just the character of Esau. His garments speak of character. He didn't care where he wore it. And he couldn't get rid of the smell of the field. May I suggest to you, that's what really was the giveaway when it came to trying to deceive the old man. Jacob was wearing something that were not his own. It was Esau's. Esau wore it hunting. He didn't care where he wore it. Sometimes as children, we had to be reminded, I'm not sure today, I think they wear anything anywhere. That's just coming into my mind, but I remember coming home and we lived on a farm and my mother was insistent that we change our clothes. She did not want us going back to meeting smelling at the barn. Just while I'm thinking on that, and I have a number of good Newfoundlanders here, maybe even some from Labrador, I didn't realize it was such a sin, but I was in a house one day and they said, you know, we can't have fish at dinner time, but we're going to have it tonight at supper. I said, what's the sin of having it at dinner time? Oh, no, they said the kids would never go back to school. The other ones said, you had fish for dinner. You had fish. I thought fish was quite a treat. But you see, what you eat and what you are amongst, you very soon will pick that up. Just in a very personal application, let me say, brethren and sisters, I can't go everywhere during the week and not expect to pick up the odor of stench that this world has. That's what it is. This world literally sends a stench into the nostrils of God. How delightful it must have been to God Himself to have a son and all of His garments at all times, as it is given to us in some rendering. Which smell is described here of myrrh and aloes and cassia out of the ivory palaces whereby they have made thee glad. Second garment likely had was the gorgeous robe that Luke tells us about that was put on him by Herod. That gorgeous robe may have had some fragrance associated with it. I'm not sure. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but it was a gorgeous robe. It'd be far different than what he was wearing, even though they were going to mock him in it. Then, of course, there was the purple robe that was put on him before he stood before Pilate and all the people. I'm not sure what kind of a fragrance that may have had on it, whether it was the smell of Rome or the smell of government. But whatever he wore, it was not the fragrance that was in the garment. It was not what it came in contact with like it is with you and I. He gave it that fragrance. Okay? His own person, his own character, gave whatever he wore. I am told that the most expensive garment in our world today sits in Christie's auction house in New York. You say, what garment's that? It happens to be a dress that the Princess of Wales, Princess Diana, wore on a New York ballroom floor when she danced with John Travolta. It's going to come up for auction. They're getting ready for it. What it'll bring or what it doesn't bring, I really don't care, but I'm going to tell you something. That thing wouldn't have any smell of righteousness to it, no matter how much the world wants to pay for it. It'll likely smell what the rest of our world smells of immorality and wickedness and lewdness. That's not the kind of fragrance that he was associated with. He came in contact with all kinds of defilement. Remember, this is the one that went into the leper's colony. Not lepers as they are treated and looked after in countries today, but where the stench and the smell was obnoxious. Their own family wouldn't go near them. He would move in that, yet never become defiled. All of his garments, says the psalmist, all of them, smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia of the ivory palaces whereby they have made thee glad. And of course, they would put his own garments back on him again, and you might link even with what Joseph and Nicodemus would put that clean linen cloth on him. And very obviously, you remember how it was bound in his death with the myrrh and with the frankincense. And finally, it gives that fragrance that's so marked and so defined the life of the Son of God. We pick up a, as I've been trying to point out to you, we pick up a fragrance from those that we're around. Paul writes to the Corinthians, he says we pick up something else, that's a savor. Now that's something totally different. If I am out and around that godless world, unchecked. Now, there are brethren here that have to go to work in that kind of environment Monday morning. Listen to something they'd never heard in this building, in this auditorium all weekend. The oaths and the curses of godless men. And all their defilement, all their dirty jokes that they'll tell just to right in your face, so to speak. Just to embarrass you. I know, we got brethren back home that work in those environments. Isn't it nice to be able to come to the Word of God and read of one whose garments were like this and spend time with him? Because you know what we'll do? We will pick up his fragrance. And what a lovely fragrance that was. Lisa Beamer, who is the widow of Todd Beamer, on Flight 93. Remember that crash there in western Pennsylvania after 9/11? Very interesting story, and visited her postcards and songs and letters that were sent to her from friends, people that she didn't even know. Todd Beamer's last words recorded right into the FAA center were these words, "Let's roll." And that's when those passengers teamed up and decided they're going to try and deliver their pilots and rescue that large aircraft, but it failed. Lisa, in her book, at least in the article I read, said it was hard packing away personal items that belonged to Todd. She professes to be saved. You know, I'm not sure. I've never really heard how she got saved. Not that I would be a judge of that. But she said there's something I've never done. And she says there was a closet, and we just referred to it as Todd's closet. She says he was a man that liked fragrances. She says, as soon as I open that door, I'm reminded of Todd, my husband, his fragrance. We are associated today with one whose fragrance in a defiling scene was never disturbed, never affected. Didn't matter what they gave him to wear. He gave it fragrance. Why? It's where he came from, out of the ivory palaces. How sweet, how delightful to think of Joseph and Nicodemus bringing that tremendous weight and costly myrrh and aloes that they would put with that linen cloth for his burial. It hardly gets a mention. Yet there's a dear little woman with hardly anything. She takes that alabaster box and she breaks it. And the Lord speaks much about it. Do you know why that is? Let me suggest to you the difference. One was after the Savior had died. The other was while he was still alive, and so was she. Let's give him that praise and thanksgiving, that worship that he is. There's no doubt that the Lord instituted this supper knowing that we would take not only a savor of it and from it. I trust everyone this morning can take a fragrance of what has been ascending to God audibly and inaudibly from this company. Whether it be from stammering tongue or limited language, to God, it is a sweet fragrance of praise. Do you know what that does? That permeates the company. Do you know, I'd like to carry that as I move into this week, and I'm sure that you would too, to be linked with this man, of whom it could be said, all of his garments, malab, myrrh, aloes, cassia, those whereby they have made thee glad.